Edition of Insights into the Weekly Parsha. So nice to see everybody. Welcome to the Boca Jewish Center Zoom room. And those of you who are tuning in via Facebook Live, always look forward to the opportunity for us to be able to learn together. Very busy time of year getting ready for this coming Shabbos. Shabbos officially is called Shabbos HaGadol, the Shabbos before Pesach. It's Erev Pesach Shechalios B'Shabbos, when the eve of Passover falls out on Shabbos, a whole litany and list of laws that we've been discussing over the course of the past number of weeks. The Shabbos HaGadol Drasha this past week in some shuls on Shabbos and in our community this past Sunday night, but it's still nonetheless the Haftorah is read for Shabbos HaGadol. This is coming Shabbos HaGadol Parshas Tzav. We have an opportunity to learn together. I always appreciate it greatly. Before we begin, I would like to take an opportunity to thank our very generous sponsors of our learning this morning, to our very dear friends, AB and Don Pomerantz, who have commemorated this morning's learning, the Zecher Nishmas, the first yahrzeit of Abi's beloved mother, Chavi Pomerantz, Chava Rochel Bas Akiva. Her neshama should have an aliyah, and the schus, the merit of our studying together. It should be a schus for her neshama, and it should be a merit, a schus for the entire family. Thank you so much, Abi and Don, for your generous sponsorship. We have an opportunity this morning to learn Parshas Tzav together. For those of you who'd like to follow along in the art scroll, Blue Stone Chumashim, in the Hebrew, page 568, page 569 in the English. So let's get going. Very, very important parsha. The parshos in Sefer Vayikra, the karbonos, the offerings, and the many lessons that we learned together. So the beginning of our parsha in Parshas Tzav describes the Kohen. And what he wore and why it is significant is what we're going to learn together. And the wearing of the garment that we specifically talk about, learn together, is midei bad, which was a fitted linen garment that was referring to the special priestly vestments worn by the Kohanim. A list of Kohanim garments are mentioned. We have also in Parshas Tetzaveh, in our Parsha here as well, what are the garments and what are the meanings of the garments, and specifically the Kohen Gadol, what did he wear? The eight garments of the Kohen Gadol, but of course, the Kohanim themselves, they wore garments that were unique to the other members of Klal Yisrael. The pasuk tells us in the very beginning, the first three pesukim, "Vayidaber Hashem el Moshe lemor," and the Ribono Shelam, God Almighty, speaks to Moshe Rabbeinu, saying, "Tzavis Aharon v'zbonav lemor." You'll remember and recognize these words from the Karbonos that we recite every single day. So Rabbi Pesach Kron says that the most important part of davening is, of course, the Karbonos. And we're going to understand why that's pshat and what that means, because of course, Kriya Shema, of course, the Shemone Esrei is the essential, quintessential part of Tefillah. That's the goal where we get to. But we understand why Karbonos, unfortunately, many Kehilos skip right over Karbonos. They start with Brachas, head right to Rabbi Shmuel Omer. But the Karbonos, as we understand, with Kavanas, the Gemara Tainus tells us, if they're said with an intent and intentional, the words are like the Hakrava, our actions, which we hope Yemir Tzashem will be to fruition with the Binyan Beis HaMikdash, the rebuilding of our temple. But it's fascinating with Mishacharav Beis HaMikdash, with the destruction of the temple. We don't have the ability to bring our Karbonos, Kedas V'Kedin, as we wish and yearn to do. Says the Gemara, teaches the Talmud, that the Amira, the saying, the reading of these words is Ahakrava, is the fulfillment, and that's part of what we're going to learn together. Tzav is Aharon V'Zbonov. So says the Kodesh Baruch to Moshe Rabbeinu, command your brother, command Aharon, and command Ezbonov, his sons. And this is what you should say, Leimar, Zoyz Teiras Ha'olahi. This is the law of the burnt offering. There's a litany of different offerings of karbonos, karbon todah, karbon shlomim. Of course, we have the karbon Pesach in the season that we're in right now. So this is the karbon oila. This is the burnt offering that is burnt, which burns on the mizbeach, on the altar, all night, throughout the night until ad haboker, until the morning. And ve'esh hamizbeach tukad bo, the fire, the eish of the altar of the Mizbeach shall burn with it. And here's where we get in transition in Pasuk Gimel, Perek Vav, Pasuk Gimel, chapter 6, verse 3, where we understand, we learn about the garments. V'lovash ha-kohen. You should know, the Kohen has to wear certain clothing. What does he wear? He should don. His midai vad, that's the midai vad, which is this linen tunic that he wears and drapes upon his body. Michnasei vad, ilbash al-besorah, he puts it on again. He shall put on these linen trousers. It should be on his flesh. Yilbash al besor v'heirim es adeshen. And then what he does is he lifts out all of the ash into which the fire has consumed the oila, the burnt offering, upon the mizbeach, and he put them down next to the altar. That's his adeshen. Ashay toichal oish es ha'oila al mizbeach v'samoy, places it down, eitzel, HaMizbeach, how essential the Mizbeach, the altar, is, and his cleaning out the Trumas HaDeshen, the cleaning out of the ashes, placing them right next to it. These are the psukim. Then here's what's fascinating, though, when you think about these words, Midevad, this linen, this tunic, this garment that the Kohen wears, the Balaturim, Rabbi Yaakov ben Asher, he writes something that's very interesting, specific to these words. He observes, learning these verse, these phrases, that this actually marks, these words, Midevad, marks one of only two other instances, the two instances total. There's only one other instance in the entire corpus of Tanakh where we find the word Mido. Now, where's that other place? The other place that we see and find this word is a description of the military garb that's worn by David HaMelech's Sar, by his general Yoav. And the Baal HaTurim writes, you can find this in the Mikros Kadosh, he says like this, that Mido Beis Mesorah, there's only two places in all of Mesorah in Tanakh that we find this word Mido. Zokta Baal HaTurim, he says, Velova Shakoyin Midevad, the Yoav Chogar Mido. So he finds, he guards and girds himself, the Mido Levusho, he guards himself with this type of garment. So it's understandable what he says is the following, Shebigdei Kahuna Hayakein Bigdei Milchama. Fascinating words, says the Baal HaTurim. You should know that the garments of the Kohen are like Kain, like the Begodim, like the garments of the Sar Milchama, are like the garments of he who leads in battle, which is fascinating. What is this relationship between the Big Day Kohen, the Big Day Baal HaMilchama, Yoav, the Sar, the general of David HaMelech? This is what the Baal HaTurim tells us. Now, this unusual phrase, Midevad, this term, it points to a connection of sorts between these two contexts. What is this connection? That the priestly vestments, the garments that are worn by the Kohen, the Big Day Kohen, and the general's uniform, what the Sar, what he's wearing. It's not just you're going to go out to battle wearing just your regular shorts and a t-shirt. No, no, no. You're going to go out and you're going to wear a general's uniform. What's the general's uniform? That's the Bigodim of Big Day Milchama. So the Baal HaTurim explains that when the Kohen, when he would wear and he donned his special garments that were necessary to be worn when he was serving the Beis HaMikdash. So now you should know, it wasn't just Stam Azoy that he's wearing these special garments. Like, why do you wear these special garments? You have to understand, what we understand from this Baal HaTurim is that he was as powerful as a mighty general leading his troops to battle. Very powerful statement. Very powerful lesson. That the garments of the Kohen Gadol, the garments of the Stam Kohen, the Kohen Hedjot, when he wore the garments that were necessary, changed, he went into the dressing room, and he changed his garments from the Big Day Rechoy, from the what he wore in the street, to the Big Day Kahuna, the being Oved in the Beis HaMikdash. That meant something very powerful. As the general girds himself in the garments for Milchama, for battle, it gives him the fire, the confidence to be able to lead and to be successful in his battle, to overcome and dominate the enemy, the aggressor. So too, you should know the Koyach, the power of the Big Day Kahuna, what it does, it's what's right about the righteous. What is it that's right about the righteous? We understand in the Bali Musar, we are taught a very important idea, that there's something called the chitzonius, the external, the outside, the beged, the garment, which is ma'ira the panemius, which awakens, arouses the panemius. There's something that may, perhaps for some, lie dormant, lay quiet, be uninspired of what's inside a person. But to light that flame, to ignite that match, to get a person on fire, sometimes what you need is the outside, the chitzonius. It arouses, it awakens, it alarms the panemius, and the panemius, the neshama, the soul, the person's essence, it awakens, it arises, and it arrives in its purpose for which it was, and we are created to do, to have our soul be dominant. So sometimes what happens is when you put on a uniform, lahavdil, you're watching a ball game, and you put on your favorite team's jersey, you feel like, in case somebody's going to check me into the game, coach, check me into the game, because I feel ready to play. I want to be a linebacker. I want to be the quarterback. Give me the ball. I want to shoot the last shot. When I'm wearing that uniform, I feel like I'm more of a fan. I feel like more ready to be in the game. I feel it. So too we see the general who goes out to war, he feels it. So too, Big Day Kahuna houses for the Kohen, the Hargosha, the feeling, the panemius that's aroused by the chitzonius, how you dress is so essential to what you feel. It's not dissimilar to when Rivka wanted Yaakov Avinu to wear the Big Day Esav when she was going to dress him in the garments of her brother. Because in some capacity, even though the call is the call of Yaakov, the Yadayim Yedei Esav, he was unable to go forward with doing what he had to do if he didn't feel a little bit like Esav. It was essential. Not that he would understand who the midos were of that person, infused those midos of Esau, but that he understood what he needed to do in the form of achieving what his mother knew he had to achieve. So there's something about the begadim, it's about the garments. But what we're going to understand is there's something even a little bit more powerful, a little bit as we drill a little bit deeper, how to apply this message to our lives and how we are to live with this very important teaching of the Baal HaTurim, the juxtaposition, these two concepts, Beis B'Misora, two places in Tanakh, these two contexts, the big day, Kahuna, big day, Sar HaMilchama, how they come together, what they do, and how it means so meaningfully for our lives. So a classic example of this idea that's taught by the Baal HaTurim is a famous story that's told in the Gemara Maseches Yuma, folio 69a. Well-known story, famous story of Alexander the Great. Alexander the Great, who led his army in the direction of Yerushalayim Ir HaKodesh. He wanted to come to Yerushalayim for one reason and one reason only. He wanted to conquer Yerushalayim. He wanted to dominate Yerushalayim. That's the reason why Alexander the Great came to Yerushalayim. Now, the Gemara Maseches Yuma presents a dramatic encounter and a confrontation between who was then the Kohen Gadol, the high priest Shimon HaTzadik, and Alexander. Now, you have to understand, actually, if you look at the Gemara, it has even more of a dramatic pre this encounter and then post the encounter. But this encounter that I'm going to extrapolate now is the most important part, I think, of the encounter all told. So he explains the following. The Gemara says that there's this great and very dramatic encounter between Shimon HaTzadik, who was Kohen Gadol, and his Mishyari, Me'anshei Knesset HaGedola, the same Shimon HaTzadik who taught us in Pirkei Avos, Al Shlosha Dvarim Ha'olam Oymein. The world stands on three things. Stands on Torah, Avodah, and Gemilus Chasodim. That the world is sustained by the study of Torah, the living of Torah, the Avodah, the service, and that work, which is duties of the heart, Avodah Shebalev, Tefillah, Dveikus, connection through prayer, and finally on Gemilus Chasodim, on acts of loving kindness. That's who Shimon HaTzadik Mishyari, Me'anshei Knesset HaGedola, that's the great Kohen Gadol, the high priest Shimon HaTzadik, and he confronts and encounters Alexander, a.k.a. Alexander the Great. Now the Gemara records that Alexander, he stood at the gates of Yerushalayim. His intentions, as I mentioned, were to destroy or to battle it. That caused all of the people who came to, who lived in the city, they were to tremble. They were fearful. They were, everybody who lived there was terrified for their lives because they knew that this great general was there and he wanted to destroy the city, wanted to take over the city and destroy them. So what happens? Shimon HaTzadik, he realizes that he's got a weapon. He's got what's right about his righteousness. He decides that he puts on his big day love. Now the Gemara has a conversation about whether or not a person is able to leave, if he's able to leave this holy compound of the Mikdash wearing the big day kahuna. And l'chayr, it seems as if first pshat in the Gemara is that he's not. And here the Gemara proves that you are. Now maybe it was an eislasos, a circumstance of great and pressing need. We understand that this is a circumstance of extraordinary heightened proportion. And suffice it to say, though, the Gemara uses this as a proof, a positive supporting evidence that, in fact, you could leave this azar in this area, the Mikdash, this compound, wearing big day kain, big day kain gadol. So we understand that Shimon HaTzadik, he puts on the big day love on. He wears the white garments that he wore in Yom Kippur when he entered into the Kodesh HaKadoshim. Again, he had a variety of different garments that he wore, the big day zahav, big day love on, and how many times he transferred from one location to another location. And not only did he transfer from one location to the other location, but he also changed his garment one location to another location. Good. So he wears the big day love. The big day love, and he goes into Lifnai V'Lifnim. He goes into the inner of inner. He goes to the Kodesh HaKadoshim. He goes into the inner sanctuary. And he wears the big day kuna, the big day love, and rather in this spot. So now this is not Yom Kippur. This is not the Haktorah. This is not the moment of which we've all been waiting for in the Yom Adin and Yom HaGadol V'Anayra. No, no, no. It's another circumstance. Alexander's outside. Alexander the Great, he wants to take over Yerushalayim. So what is he doing? Takes it upon himself to put on the big day love on the white garments that he wears in Yom Kippur when he ordinarily enters into the Kodesh HaKodoshim, the Holy of Holies, and he takes the initiative and he goes out to meet with Alexander. They're face to face, they're front and in front of each other, and now there's this great encounter, reminiscent, although they're not brothers, but reminiscent, of course, of Yaakov and Esav. There have been so many great encounters. There's a series on the great encounters. The great encounters in the Bible, Yaakov and Esav. And here, of course, you have a consequential, monumental meeting that takes place between Shimon HaTzadik between the great high priest Shimon, Simon, and Alexander. Now, what happens when they have this encounter? It's like a stare down. There's a draw, you know, the southern draw. They're going to now see who's going to dominate. They're looking at each other, staring at each other. They realize something that's extraordinary. The great emperor, he sees Shimon HaTzadik, and he dismounts from his, let's assume he's on a horse. He dismounted from his high perch, and he comes, the Gemara says, and he prostrates himself on the ground, and he bows down to Shimon HaTzadik. Now, when his general is very puzzled, they ask him, we'll read the Gemara inside in a moment, they ask him, why in the world are you bowing down to this Jew? So what does he say? That every single night before a victory, so he would see in his dream the demus, a figure, he would see somebody that looked very much like this man. He would see the figure of this Jewish high priest, and he would get advice from this person in his dream, that this advisor would tell him what tactics he should use, which tactics he should not, which military successes he should employ, which things he should stay away from. And that advice never failed him. That's what the Gemara says. Kevon Shirol L'Shimon. Frag the Gemara, Daf 69a, Maseches Yuma, the Gemara says, Kevon Shirol L'Shimon, when Alexander Shimon HaTzadik Yorad Merkavta, he got off from his chariot, from his high perch, Vishtachavol Lifonov, and he bowed before him, Amrula Melech Godol Kemoischa, Yishtachavel Yudi. So his generals, the people around them said, I don't understand. What are you bowing down to? A Jew, this is a guy you're going to bow down to. Amar lem demus diyonkoi shel zeh mina tzachas lifonai beveis milchamti. Like we learned that you should know this face is familiar to me. Every single time I went to sleep, I would dream of this image and I would pop up and I would see this face and I would get advice about how to be victorious in the battlefield. And when I fight, I see this image going before me as a symbol, as a sign of victory, and therefore I know that he has a supreme sanctity. It's like with Yosef HaTzadik, when he was in the bias of Eshes Potiphar. We know the extreme example of where he was tempted time and again, and finally that day came, they were alone, Chazal tell us, and as he was maybe succumbing to the temptation, when he brought himself and he was brought close to her, that's why the garment was able to be exchanged in such close proximity. What did he see? Chazal tell us he saw the demus. He saw the image of his father, of Yaakov Avinu. He sees the image of his father and he's shaken because he realizes the extreme sanctity of his father. It reminds him of how to live as he ought to live. And therefore, he is now not interested in doing that. And of course, we know the rest of the story. The rest is history, as we like to say. It's the same idea. So says Alexander, says the Gemara, that when he would see this image, he not only would get advice about how to be successful, but he would realize that that image was a simon, was a symbol of his victory, his success. And therefore, he knew that if that's the face, he never knew who this person was. He never knew who this person was. Because at the end of the day, he had never met him before. But now he has this image. And now he realizes that this image that stands before him is an incredibly special person for whom he got off from his from his chariot, from his high horse. And now he bowed down to him to show deference to the supreme Kedusha, the sanctity, the holiness of who this man was. They have to understand what happens in the aftermath of this. This is an extraordinary story. Imagine, like, they come with their swords unsheathed. They're ready to knock out whoever they can knock out. They want to take over a whole city of Yerushalayim, but no, the Big Day Love One. But it's more than the Big Day Love One. It's the Kedusha Sa'adam, the power and the holiness of an individual who lives on such a level, who lives on such a plane, who's able to inspire with his words, with positivity and goodness and righteousness. The right of the righteousness is gewaldic. It's amazing how it's able to then require thus the sheaf of the sword. It goes back in. And then what happens is then there is no plundering. There is no destruction of Mikdash. What happens afterwards is also fascinating. As I'll tell us, the Shimon HaTzadik then, imagine now they encounter each other. The intensity is diminished. It seems as if there's a certain camaraderie now that happens. And Shimon HaTzadik, Chazal tell us, takes Alexander HaGreat on a tour of the Beis HaMikdash. Here, this is the place that you wanted to take over and vanquish. Here, let me give you a tour. Let me walk you around. So what happens? Alexander, he was like very, very ma'od impressed, very impressed. So he made a request of Shimon HaTzadik, the high priest. He says, how about this? Let's put a marble bust, a marble image of myself. Let's put it in the temple. Let's commemorate this encounter. Baruch Hashem. Those are my words, not his. Baruch Hashem. Nothing bad happened over here, but let's commemorate this encounter. Let's commemorate what happens. and you'll put a marble image, a statue of myself in the base of Mikdash. Now, what is Shimon going to do? A tzaddik, Mishiyar Knesset Gedola, what does he do? He demurs. He says, we cannot do that. It's usur. No, not allowed. No can do. Sorry. It's usur for the Jews to have images. And certainly you can't have images in the Beis HaMikdash, in the Holy Temple. That just will not go. Cannot be. So now what's he going to do? You know, you have to be a chacham. You have to, you know, think outside the box. And he didn't know what to do. He didn't want to insult him. But he also couldn't agree to something that's forbidden, something that's usur. You're going to have images. You're going to have chalila, statue. Inside the Beis HaMikdash, let alone a statue anywhere else. But certainly, Allah has kama v'kama inside the Beis Elokeinu, the house of God. Kenisht, can't do it. So therefore, what would he do? So he has to come up with another suggestion. So here's what he comes up with. This is gewaltig. He says, okay, here's another way of memorializing the occasion of the emperor's visit to the city of the Jews, the holy city of Yerushalayim. This is what we're going to do. He says, we're going to make a takana. We're going to make a decree. That will be, that how would it be if all male babies born that year would have the name and be given the name Alexander? That's what we're going to do. We're going to memorialize this event by saying that anybody and everybody who has this a baby boy, give the name Alexander. So the emperor thought to himself, wow, that's gewaldig. That's great. And so therefore, actually, if you know, there are a number of people that I know, I'm sure tons of people that you know, that the Hebrew name is Alexander. And they have the name Alexander. The emperor liked this idea, and that's how the name Alexander became part of the set of names conferred upon Jewish male babies, not just that year, but also for all time. That is the history. Why your name, if your name is Alexander, or if you know anybody whose name is Alexander, why and how they got that name? This is how and why they got the name. Because of this encounter of Shimon at Tzadik, Mishiyore, Me'anshe, Knez, Zagidolim, this encounter with Alexander the Great. And now we understand he was unwilling, of course, to capitulate, to put a molten, God forbid, image or any statue of any type of any form in the Mikdash or anywhere. And this would be the second choice. And this was, of course, accepted. And this is what was done. And this is the reason why we have many names in our people who are male who have the name Alexander. Now you have to remember, until that day, Alexander the Great never knew who this man was. He never knew who Shimon HaTzadik was. And that, because he never knew who he was, is significant. And why he appeared to him during battle, he never understood. He knew that it was beneficial for him, but he didn't know why. Like, he didn't understand this. And now he's standing before somebody who's like taken aback. He was like brought to his knees, literally brought to the floor. Yishtachaveh. And now he understood. It was the merit, this is the chus of this great tzaddik, the great sayyid, the big tzaddik, the great righteous one, Shimon HaTzaddik, the Kohen Gadol, who brought him this unprecedented success that he enjoyed. It's because of him. It was that encounter that reminded him that this is the man that does it. He owed everything to Shimon HaTzaddik. The pious, righteous Kohen who's garbed in these special priestly attire, serving in this temple, serving the Beis HaMikdash, he owed everything to him. Now, you see, sometimes there are people that their successes come from other people. And those people sometimes never forget. Never forget who gave you your first job, who opened the first door, who made the connection for you. But then sometimes, sadly, there are some people that as quickly as they were to jump on the opportunity and the door that you had opened for them, opportunity that you provided for them, that person quickly forgets. They don't remember anything. Oh, you were the one who set me up with this job. You're the one who gave me my success. I'm the one who got my success. No, you can never forget the people that opened the doors for it. So what's interesting, fascinating in part about this story is that when he realized that this man, that this person, Shimon HaTzadik, was one who was responsible for this unprecedented success that he enjoyed. So then what? Then he jumped all over that. He says, oh, I have to give gratitude and thanks to this person. I can't destroy the city. I can't destroy this temple. I have to keep it going. I have to make sure that it is what it is. That's a very important Kiddush Hashem concept, which is when we act as we have to act, when we do what we're supposed to do, when we garb ourselves physically and, of course, spiritually, emotionally, in the righteousness of how we're supposed to live our lives, look at the consequences. And this is what the Baal HaTurim is teaching us, that the garments of the Kohen Gadol have extraordinary power and are a major weapon in our struggles against our foes. It's not just the clothes alone. It's what the clothes represent. It's the clothes that represent who's wearing the clothes. It's the Kohen Gadol who lives with that spiritual level, that Kedusha, the Tahara, that holiness. I wear something that represents a person of stature because I am a person of stature. And even if I don't feel like a person of stature, then I dress up for the occasion. Even if it's not for the genuine purposes that I should have in my mind, eventually what's going to happen, it's going to happen. It's going to be schlepped along, and therefore eventually I'm going to feel what I'm supposed to feel. And indeed, this is what the Baal HaTurim is telling us. When you go into battle and you feel powerful, you're wearing the big day milchama, you feel like you're going to do it. You feel like you're going to dominate. You feel like you're going to be victorious. You feel like your enemy has no chance. Your adversary, he's doomed. He's going to be brought down to the ground. That is the big day milchama. It's also the big day kahuna. It's also all of the begadim. It's the righteousness. It's the person. It's the ich. It's the neshama. It's the soul. And this is what we understand. Our chachamim, our sages teach us that although we cannot offer sacrifices today, and although we cannot perform the other mitzvos of the Beis HaMikdash, unfortunately, as I mentioned earlier, you know, we can do. We can nevertheless be considered as having performed all of the service of Beis HaMikdash as much as we can through our study of the relevant laws. Sometimes you get the different tractates and we tend to feel like I have no connection to those tractates. I have nothing to relate to with all of those karbonos, Sefer Vayikra, all of the offerings, all of the things that seem to be related to things that I can't do even now. No, through just the limud of that, through the study of that. I mean, we just finished Arei Psachim, Meseches Psachim, this past week in the Daf Hayomi. I know many Kamhilos, including ours, twice this morning, we had a Sim Meseches Psachim, Arei Psachim, the Dinim of Karban Pesach. So a person could say that Karban Pesach, it's a Zikaron, it's a remembrance, which it is. But it's also by limud, by learning of the laws, we understand the saying of the Karbonos in a real and heartfelt way. There's a relevance, there is a permanence, and there's a kiyum hamitzvah. There's the fulfillment, as if ki'ilu hikravtem, as if you've performed the service through the limud, through the tefillah. When we study about the karbonos, for example, we're considered as though we've actually offered the karbonos upon the mizbeach. It's essential. When, therefore, when we study parshas and sefer Vayikra, which deal with the karbonos and the other subjects related to the Beis HaMikdash, we gain an access to their extraordinary power. We don't think of them in any other way, it's karev, it's kiruv, it's kroiva, it's karbon, it's devekis, it's closeness. It's not germane to us. It's not unrelatable to us. It's not impactful or powerful. Pun fakert, it's the exact opposite. It's extremely, extremely, extraordinarily powerful. These topics, they might seem esoteric. They might seem irrelevant. They might seem uninspiring, but they're immensely and immeasurably valuable. And how they're measurably and immensely valuable, as we understand this story in the Beis HaMikdash, and you learn about it, and you study it, and you feel, and you understand that krava, the person, the neshama, the soul of everybody, you know what it can happen. You can have this encounter with the Alexander the Great, which, by the way, happens every single day. We all have encounters with Alexander the Great. The Sitra Acher, the Yitzhahara, that demonic force, whether it's physical or spiritual, that stands before us with an unsheathed sword, wanting to destroy us, our people, our theology, our religion, wanting anything and everything that has to do with all that is antithetical to Torah and mitzvahs, and it unsheaths its proverbial sword and says thus, capitulate, join the ranks of those who do not keep the laws as they should. No. We say, let me wear my garment of holiness. Let me have you my humility, my anivus. Let me live with the righteousness as I'm supposed to live. And that's the akrava karbonis. That's the offerings. That's tzav, as Aaron Vesbonov. This is the offering that is told to us. HaKadosh Baruch Hu tells Moshe to tell Aaron, to tell his son, to tell everybody, know what is this opportunity. This is midai vad. The lesson of this garment, of this linen tunic that he wears, that we wear, that we're inspired to wear, and we understand it is a very deep lesson. And of course, because we find ourselves in the immediate proximity to the Yom Tov of Pesach, the Chag HaCherus, the festival of our freedom, of our emancipation from bondage and slavery, it's appropriate for us to understand likewise how we know what it is for us to appreciate in the Karban Pesach, of which I mentioned in my drusha this past Sunday evening, the ageless level of resonance and permanence and application of the dinim of Karban Pesach, it should be lamaisa. But let's understand on a deeper level for just another moment. We understand that if you study it deeper and you understand what its deepest meaning is, you realize what it can do. And that's where we understand the Mishnah tells him, Seches Pesachim, which we quote in our Haggadah, Rambam Gamliel, Haya Omer Kol Shelo Omer, anybody does not Omer Shelo Shedvarim Elu B'Pesach Liyotze Dechavoso, one has not fulfilled their obligation. Pesach, Matzah, Moror, so Pesach, of course, we know Pesach, Shavuseinu, Oichlem, Mizman, Shabbos, Mikdash, Kayim, Al Shum, Shepesach, Hamokam, Al Bati, Avuseinu, B'Mitzrayim. We know the Paschal Lamb that our fathers ate in the time of the Beis HaMikdash. Again, we find ourselves back to studying about the Beis HaMikdash. What reason did they do it? Because HaKadosh Baruch Hu b'chvodo v'atzmo v'amartem zevach pesach u'lashem asher posach al batei b'nei Yisrael b'mitzrayim, that he passed over the houses of the Israelites in Egypt when he struck the Egyptians with a plague, and he saved our houses. Hitzil bateinu. He saved our houses. The people bowed. Vayikoid ha'am v'yishtachavu, and the people bowed and prostrated themselves. Sounds unbelievably familiar how we are to live our lives. But to understand this Paschal offering, the offering that our fathers ate, to understand it on a little bit of a different level, there's two lessons of this that I'll share with you, and then we'll end our learning for this morning till next time. There's something unique about this Pesach offering, the Paschal offering. Like all of the Karbanos we learn in Parshas Tzav and Sefer Vayikra, and in Arvei Pesachim and Maseches Pesachim, learning about the Paschal offering, one is not fulfilled their obligation if they don't embellish Kol HaMarba, Reza Meshubach, about the Karban Pesach along with Matzah and Marah. What was it that was something that was rather unique about the Paschal offering? Was that it was brought by the Israelites on their last day in Egypt. Of course, we know that the first time. Now, in general, the laws regarding sacrifices, there's a klal, is that when a person offers an animal sacrifice to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, so it's usher to offer, it's forbidden to offer an animal that was used for an idolatrous practice. Right? Now, meaning once this animal is used for an idolatrous practice, it's disqualified for any holy purpose. You can't bring it to this high, elevated level of a hakrava, of a burning, of a sacrifice for something that's holy if something's been used for something profane ad kedei kach to such an extent. Now, the rule did not apply. I mean, obviously, the Mitzrayim, they used the lambs, the shepslach, they used their sheep for, that was their pagan, that was their god, that was their worship, that was their deity. So if they used something that was for the idolatrous practice, how would we as Jews be able to allow ourselves to use the Paschal sacrifice for our holy purposes? The Jews, so of course, this rule did not apply to the Israelites during the Paschal sacrifice in Mitzrayim. Right? Meaning why? Because when the Jews collected the lamb that would be offered to God, they took animals that which were worshipped by the Egyptians. They were their deities. And then they used the same animals to worship God on the night of Pesach, on the very first Pesach Seder. So obviously it didn't apply. Now, very interesting, why not? Why should we overlook this law? It seems to be very significant. And when we come to Ulahaba, we understand, with the exception of this first Pesach, that's the din. That's the rule. That if, in fact, it is that there's some animal sacrifice that's used for a deity or some type of pagan offering or pagan worship, then obviously we can't use it for holy worship. So then what's the explanation? This says Rav Kook, and Rav Kook's commentary on the Haggadah, he says the following, that this was done for a very specific reason, very, very powerful reason. Ready? Fasten your seatbelts. Here we go. Rav Kook says that this was done in order to teach B'nai Israel a very important lesson. Because you have to remember what the status of these Israelites were at this time. They were slaves with a slave mentality. They were avodim leparo b'mitzrayim. So Rav Kook says this was done in order to teach the Israelite slaves their eternal message and their eternal mission as a people. This was an essential moment. Here, they're going after 210 years of servitude and slavery. Now this transitional moment, and now they're going to transition into the national narrative, the eternal mission. What's the lesson? What is this mission? What is the eternal mission that Rav Kook says they have to learn? Now, although something, this is unbelievable, although something may be mired in impurity, even though something might be with tmeya, and it might be with vermin, it might be with filth, with dirt, you have to know, Kindalach says, Rav Kook, about this message, Omar HaKadosh Baruch Hu, you have to know that even though there's an impurity, even though there's a level of filth, even though there's something that's a richuk, it's a distance, you should know it can still be elevated. It can still be sanctified. The blemished animal could be made a holy offering and it could be offered to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, to Shemaya. You have to understand what this message means. That the Jewish people themselves, likewise, who in Egypt had sunk to Memtes Sharei Tumah, they sunk to the depths of the 49th level of spiritual impurity and were almost completely assimilated into the idolatrous culture around them. And they were almost lost forever. Even they could be uplifted. And even they could be made great. The challenges that we face, the yiridas that we have, we fall short. We have great aspirations. We set out tremendous goals. We want to accomplish and achieve. And sometimes we're unable to reach the place that we hope to reach. The goals are just sometimes not founded. We're unable to be the best we can be, but the answer to how we respond to that is never to be miyayish, never to give in despair. We are not as far as the Jews were. They were mamish right there, but they were able to turn around in a flash. Says Rav Kook, this is the mission of the Jewish people, the eternal mission, no matter what it will be. If you're mired in impurity, if you're mired in filth, if you've fallen short, if you know you can do better, you can still do it. You can elevate, you can sanctify, you can turn what's blemished into holy, and therefore you can be uplifted and you can be made great. This is an essential lesson for us to internalize, to understand this idea of this deep lesson of carbon, in this case, carbon Pesach. One final thought. We know that when we say Pesach al Shum Ma, this is where the Mefarshim, the commentaries, explain that the mitzvah of bringing a carbon Pesach was to bring Klal Yisrael to the ultimate point of Mesiras Nefesh, right? Why? To test their faith in Hashem by slaughtering the God of the Egyptians. They couldn't be afraid that they'd be killed. Imagine just not too long ago. Here they were slaves. These were the taskmasters. These are the driven rulers over their lives, and these are their deities. They're going to take them and they're going to shech them in their presence, and they're not going to be able to say anything. They're going to have to just have their teeth shatter. They're going to be able to do nothing about it. They would be terrified. They'd be scared. They'd be frightened. No, the Nisim, the Mir Siris Nefesh, this is this point of demarcation, this fortitude, this extraordinary faith in God, the test, the Nisayon, the value, that nonetheless they'd be able to do it. The Medrash says there's something else. There's another reason that's based on the concept of Mida Keneged Mida. And this is the final thought that we'll learn together this morning in our Parsha and an extension of Erev Pesach, understanding this very valuable lesson of learning that lie what beneath the surface and how to apply it to our lives. Says the Medrash that there's another reason, a concept of what we call Mida Keneged Mida, or in English we say it, it's measure for measure. Now you know why the Mitzrayim were being punished? Says the Medrash, the Egyptians, the Mitzrayim were being punished because they used to eat foods that gave off a very strong aroma, which in turn caused B'nai Yisrael great pain because of their inability to eat such foods. And this is a beautiful pshat that's shared by Rav Yitzchak Zilberstein Shlita, when he explains in his Haggadah, on his commentary on Haggadah Shel Pesach, Chashuke Chemed, in his writings, he says the following, that you should know that it was Mida Keneged Mida, that the Egyptians were punished because they used to eat foods that gave off a very strong aroma, which in turn caused B'nai Yisrael great pain because of their inability to eat such foods. Imagine somebody makes a food item, it smells so good and you can't eat it. HaKadosh Baruch Hu therefore commanded B'nai Yisrael to roast the carbon Pesach, and by roasting the carbon Pesach would give off a strong aroma, which would in turn afflict the Egyptians with the tremendous pain of their inability to taste and eat from this meat. It was Mida Keneged Mida. What they did to us, we did to them. And so therefore, that's what happened. HaKadosh Baruch Hu metza Mida Keneged Mida. What is their due punishment? And of course, the Alachas Kama V'Kama, the due reward, when we do things that in such a way will be rewarded in kind. So this is the Medrash interpretation. Now, one of the members of the Ramat Elchanan community says, Rav Yitzchak Zilberstein, a beautiful piece here. He says, someone in that community heard his explanation during a drusha, says of Yitzchak Zilberstein, a drusha that he gave, says drusha that he gave that's mentioned in the Haggadah, that when Yitzchak Zilberstein said this pshat and this Haggadah Shel Pesach, that somebody from the Ramat Elchanan community heard this drusha and related the following story to Rav Yitzchak about Rav Zilberstein, about his neighbor. What did he say? He said that his neighbor and their family would specifically cook the most delectable foods on Tanis, on fast days. And the smell from the cooking of what they cooked on these fast days, they left him ravenous. Imagine you're starving. It's a fast day. You just want to eat. And your neighbor makes something that has an odor, a smell that's gevaldic. And it was so, the waft of that smell was just something that all I wanted to do was eat it. So he said, I heard the drusha of the rabbi, said to Rabbi Zilberstein, and now I'm worried that from heaven above, I'm going to be punished for the same, that I will be punished for the same aver that I committed regarding the sense of smell. Sense of smell is so important. Of course, how significant, he said it was. His complaint became known to his neighbor, the chef. And he came to me, he came to Rabbi Zilberstein to because he also felt that he had hurt his neighbor and he wanted to do tshuva because, okay, if I made something, a smell, imagine how the righteous people, if I did something that there was a smell that caused another person to have some type of anguish and languishing for it. So that smell is something that I have to feel responsible for. So it says Rabbi Zilberstein, he said, he told the chef of his excitement as to the uniqueness of his persona, that he's concerned about something that is not really an iser, meaning if you make a delicious smelling pot of chont, you make a delicious pot of soup, you make some delicious smelling food, whatever it is, and it has a smell that will entice somebody and they want to eat it, but they can't. It's not an iser. It's not a violation. But it still bothers this Jew, this fellow, because he might have hurt somebody else's feelings. So Rabbi Zilberstein said, what a dehaibin of Madrega, what a level, what a soul you have. What kind of person are you? Wow, you're so sensitive and you're so kind and so generous. It's unbelievable. So the neighbor who caused his friend to be ravenously hungry, he said that from now on, whenever he will cook food in his house that produces a nice smell, a good aroma, he's going to give a portion to all of his neighbors. He's going to make not just for his family, not just for the immediate people that are going to come at a Shabbos and Yantif table, but everyone around that they should enjoy. So he took an opportunity where somebody's feelings might have been compromised. Maybe this person felt bad. And even though it was unnecessary for him to do this, let me look for an opportunity for how it is that I could include my neighbors, give to my neighbors, give them something that smells good, that they should be able to eat together, we together with each other, even though not necessarily at the same shulchan, at the same table, but yes, share the same foods with the same ideology, the same concept, the same idea. And this brings us back to the very first thing we started with, midayvad, the special priestly garments worn by the Kohanim, what it means when the Baal Turim says that there's a juxtaposing of these two concepts, David HaMelech and Shimon HaTzadik, and the great encounter of Masechus Yuma 69a, Shimon HaTzadik and Alexander the Great, where he came to want to destroy. It depends on the righteousness of the person, and that's why the Yanuka, the image of this righteous man, came to the face of Alexander, gave him success, and this is what he realizes, why he comes from his high chariot, his high place, his high horse, bows down in deference. He realizes that this is an extreme and supreme sanctity, and so therefore he decides that he's going to go a different route. Imagine if we all adopt that. Remember that Alexander did not know who this man was before, but he realized when he saw this man garbed, not only physically garbed, but spiritually garbed in the attire, serving the Beis HaMikdash. When we serve Ribbono Shel Olam, both in Beis Knesset, outside of Beis Knesset, we live with that duality, we live with that function, and that perfect harmony of how we are to be Mekadesh Shem Shemayim. What we do is we de-arm the weaponry of those around us who stand with their swords unsheathed, ready to battle us with that demonic force that wants us to fall. We are to elevate ourselves to the study of Karbonos, to the tefillah of Karbonos, realizing that there's a tremendous message that lies beneath the surface. And that's why Rabbi Gamliel, when he says, Le'yotze de chavoso Pesach, what it means, not just to remember what took place, Bayamim Ahem, it's also Bazman Hazeh, it's also in these days, it's understanding, it's what they ate. The lesson of Rav Kook, this idea that there's a mentality that is something that's necessary as an eternal mission of our people, which is that even though that the Jews of that time sunk to the level of Memtesh Shari Tumah, they were almost completely, totally lost. No, there's always chance. There's always an opportunity. That even though the culture that was idolatrous, it is not that one is lost forever. You can always be uplifted. You can be made great. And this last lesson of this extraordinary sensitivity, if somebody else felt hurt, somebody else felt that there was the sense, the smell, based on the Medrash, the reason why the Mitzrayim were punished, Mida Keneged Mida, if somebody might feel down, a person might feel sad, look for every opportunity, go out of your way. That chef had no obligation, was in no violation of the Reach Tov, of the good smell, the good scent of his cooking. He had no obligation to give to his neighbors, but he looked for it. And we should likewise always look for the opportunities to reach out, to give to others, to bring community together, to say a kind word, to welcome people into the embrace of your warmth, to be able to Mekadesh Shem Shemayim in every single way together. Keni Yiratzon V'nomar Amen. I really appreciate so much the opportunity. Never fail to look forward to this wonderful time of learning together. I'm very thankful to our dear friends, AB and Don Pomerantz, for the generous sponsorship of our learning this morning. I hope everybody continues to have all of your hachanos, all of your preparations pre-Pesach should be meaningful and joyous. I know that seems to be oxymoronic. How can it be joyous if I'm cleaning, I'm laboring, I'm working, I'm doing this? The answer is that every bit of every moment of every opportunity that we have before us, an opportunity for us to cleanse, to do a bedika of ourselves, and to be so scrupulous and careful and conscientious of even the minutia. Look, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, how much we love you. We do not want to be over of Pesach. We do not want chametz over of a Pesach. We do not want chametz, even a mashahu. We don't want bal yiroa, bal yimotzah. We don't want to own it. We don't want to possess it. We don't want to see it. And we're going to go and turn and flip and do and everything because we love you so much. We should be zeichet to appreciate the journey, to appreciate how extraordinary this time is. and yiratzon milfanecha, we should be zoche to the geula shlema bimheira v'yameinu v'nomar amen. Thank you so much, everybody, for listening via our Boca Jewish Center Zoom room, and those of you who have joined us via Facebook Live and our other social media portals. I wish everybody a wonderful Thursday, a meaningful Erev, and a meaningful Pesach. It should be a time of geula, a redemption for one and for all. Thank you so much for learning, and thank you so much for listening. Have a blessed, uplifted, a happy and a holy day.